भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय A reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 87, The Prayers of the Personified Vedas. We're going to read text 47 through 50. 50 has a longer verse and purport, so we'll just read through, starting from 47. We could read through the Sanskrit together. Ityadam rishim amamya tachchim yangcha mahatmana Tito gadashramam sakshad bhikkhur dvaipayana shame. Translation, Shukadeva Goswami continued, After saying this, Narada bowed down to Sri Narayan Rishi, the foremost of sages, and also to his saintly disciples. He then returned to the hermitage of my father, Dvaipayana Vyas. Sahajito Bhagavata Kritasana Parigraha Tasmai Tadvarnayam Asa Narayana Mukachchutam. Vyasadeva, the incarnation of the personality of Godhead, respectfully greeted Narada Muni and offered him a seat, which he accepted. Narada then described to Vyas what he had heard from the mouth of Sri Narayan Rishi. 49. Ityetad varitam rajan yanna prashna kritas tvaya yata brahmanya nirdeshe nirgune pi manashtarete. Thus I have replied to the question you ask me, O King, concerning how the mind can have access to the absolute truth, which is indescribable by material words and devoid of material qualities. So that returns us to verse 1 of this chapter, the original question. That was asked, how can the mind have access to the absolute truth which is indescribable by material worlds and devoid of material qualities? So that's what we've heard for the last 48 verses. By the, what are they actually, 28 verses by the personified Vedas that that describe and explain all of this. Now, text 50 is a summation by Shukadeva Goswami, and we had some nice, easy slokas preceding. Now we go back to... This one actually seems to have like about 19 syllables, which is a little bit more than any of the tunes I think we've had. So we're just going to take a running leap and give it a try. Yosho Prakshaka Arimajya Nidane Yovyakta Jijeshvaro. Try it again. Yosho Trikshaka Arimaja Nidane Yovyakta Jiveshvaro. Yashtre Svedam Anupravishyad Rishina Chakre Parashastita. Yam sampadye jahatya jam anushayi sukta kulayam yata. Tam kaivalya narastayo nimabayam jayed ajashram harim. Yosho Prakshaka Arimaja Nidhane Yovyakta Jiveshvaro. Yashri Svedam Anupurvishya Rishina Chakre Purashastita. Yam Sampadya Jahatya Jam Anushayi Sukta Kulayam Yata. Tam kaivalya narastayo nimabayam jayed ajashram harim. Others? Yosho Ladies,
word for word?
Ya.
Ya.
Who?
Asya.
Asya. This universe.
This universe.
Utrekshika.
Utrekshika.
The one who watches over. Adi. In its beginning. Madhya. Middle. Nidhane. And end. Ya. Who? Avyakta. Of the unmanifested material nature. Jiva, and of the living entities. Ishvara, the Lord. Ya, who? Shrishpa, having sent forth. Idam, this universe. Anupravishya, entering. Rishina, along with the Jiva soul. Chakra, produced. Pura, bodies. Shasti, regulates. Ta, them. Yam, to whom? Sampadya, by surrendering. Jahati, gives up. Ajam, the unborn material nature. Anushayi, embracing her. Supta, a sleeping person. Kulayam, his body. Yata, as. Tam, upon him. Kaivalya, by his purely spiritual status. Nirasta, kept away. Yonim, material birth. Abhayam, for fearlessness. Jayet, one should meditate. Ajashram, incessantly. Harim, the Supreme Lord Krishna. Translation purport by the disciples of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He is the Lord who eternally watches over this universe. who exists before, during, and after its annihilation. He is the master of both the unmanifest material energy and the spirit soul. After sending forth the creation, he enters within it, accompanying each living entity. Therefore, he creates the material bodies and then remains as their regulator. By surrendering to him, one can escape the embrace of illusion, just as a dreaming person forgets his own body. One who wants liberation from fear should constantly meditate upon him, Lord Hari, who is always on the platform of perfection and thus never subject to material birth. So that's Shukadeva Goswami's summation of the instructions of the personified Vedas. Purport. By glancing upon the dormant universe at the time of sending forth the jiva souls into creation, the Supreme Lord provides all their necessities. For those living entities who are fruit of workers, he provides intelligence and senses needed to achieve success in the material world. For those who seek transcendental knowledge, he provides the intelligence by which they can merge into the spiritual effulgence of God, thus attaining liberation. And for the devotees, he provides the understanding that leads them to pure devotional service. To arrange for these varied facilities, the Lord impels material nature to begin the process of universal evolution. Thus, the Lord is the nimitta karanam, or effective cause of creation. He is also the upadana karanam, the ingredient cause, inasmuch as everything emanates from him, and he alone is constantly present before, during, and after the manifestation of the created cosmos. Nord Narayan himself states in the Chatur Shloki Bhagavatam, Aham eva sham eva gre nanyad yat sarasat param paschad aham yade tachcha yo vishishyati sosmyaham. It is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself. Nor was there the material nature, the cause of this creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead. And after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. Bhagavatam 2.9.33. Primeval Maya and the Jiva soul may deserve the respective titles of Upadana and Nimitta causes of creation in a relative sense, but the Lord, after all, is the origin of both of them. Until he chooses to accept the mercy of the personality of Godhead, the Jiva soul is anushayi, helplessly bound up in the embrace of illusion. When he turns to the Lord's worship, he becomes anushayi in a different sense, fallen like a rod who pay obeisances at the Lord's feet. By that surrender, the soul easily casts illusion aside. Even though the liberated soul may still seem to be living in a material world, the connection he has with it is only external appearance. He pays no more regard to it than a sleeping man pays to his body, while busily engaged far, far away in his dream world. One gives up ignorance by abandoning false identification with one's material body. Sometimes one can achieve this status only by severe effort that takes many lifetimes. But in some cases, the Lord may show special consideration for one he favors, regardless of how little credit that soul may have earned by regulated practice. In the words of Sri Bhishma Dev, Yamiha Niriksha Hatagata Sarupam, those who simply saw Krishna on the battlefield attained their original forms after being killed. That even demons like Aga, Baka, and Keshi were liberated by Lord Krishna without having performed any spiritual practices is an indication of his unique position as the original personality of Godhead. Knowing this, we should put aside all fear and doubt and give ourselves fully to the process of devotional service. As his final words of commentary in this chapter, Srila Sridhar Swami writes, Sarva Shruti Shiro Ratnas Nirajita Padham Bhujam Boga Yoga Pradam Bande Madhavan Karmi Nairajya. With their effulgence, the crest jewels among all the Shrutis offer artik to the lotus feet of Lord Madhava. I pay homage to them who bestows the material enjoyment honored by material workers and also grants the divine connection with him, prized by those who bow down to him with reverence. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also takes this opportunity to offer this humble prayer. He bhaktad varyayam kanchin Baladhi Rautivo Manak, Prasadam Labhatam Yasmad, Vishita Sveha Natati. O devotees, this poor creature is standing at your doorway, waving his tail and barking. Please let him have a little prasadam so that he may become exceptional among dogs and get the best master as his owner. Here the Acharya makes a pun on his own name, Vishita, exceptional, Sva, Eva, like a dog, Nata, a tea, having a master. Such is the perfection of Vaishnava humility. And actually, in Śrīla Vishnu Chakravarti Thakura's purport on this verse, when he offers this prayer, he actually explains the pun himself. He has, you know, in several ways, he explains different ways, different meanings that he can take that of how Vishwanath is the dog at the feet of having the perfect master. Okay. Om Agyanata Prandisha Gananjana Salakaya Chakshulunitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vanchako Patrubhischa Kripa Sindhubhebhacha Patidano Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. So this is the conclusion of the prayers for personified Vedas. Some of you will be sorry to see this pass. Others will be happy to move on. Very, very deep philosophy. Very, very wonderful. And I remember the first time I think I read this chapter, you know, 45 years ago or whatever, I really didn't understand much of anything. And I sort of always, when I was reading Krishna book or reading the Bhagavatam, I sort of would skip this chapter because it just seemed really dense, very difficult. Dense in the word meaning very, you know, thick, very, very difficult. You know, not dense like ignorant, but dense in terms of hard to pull it apart and understand. Now it seems like going through this verse by verse and with all these commentaries, it seems actually much easier to understand. Does some of you feel that way or have that experience? 40 years of January, because it helps a little bit, maybe. Yeah. But at any rate, so I thought these were some very, very nice purports. Most of them were taken directly or indirectly from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur or Sridhar Swami. So our acharyas have spent quite a bit of time illuminating the meanings of these verses. And now we have this final verse by Shukadeva Goswami, which is a summation. And as I saw it, some of this is also a little bit difficult philosophically, but there's four main points that are being made in the verse and purport. First, that Krishna eternally exists before, during, and after creation. Secondly, that Krishna is the cause and control of everything, while there may be immediate causes or other temporary causal factors, Krishna is always behind everything as the final cause. And then we discuss how the jiva can transcend material nature by a surrender to Krishna. And then finally, the fourth part, which wasn't really in the verse, but then the purport expands into, and Vishwanath discussed the same thing in his purport, that Krishna may pay special favor to the devotees even without regulated practice. So, first of all, Krishna eternally exists. He is the creator of this material world. That seems fairly apparent by now, after so much study of the Bhagavatam, going through all the chapters, and now we come to all of these verses that explaining how the material energy is created by Krishna, how Krishna is behind it, how he's not separate from it. So I think we can probably understand pretty clearly that nothing exists outside of Krishna. Krishna creates the material world, and he also enters into that material world himself. And by his glance, the jivas enter into the world. And this is, of course, confirmed by our very famous verse, which is just the first of the Chaturshlokas, Ahang Avashya Vigrihi. It's the first one, isn't it? So this is, of course, spoken by Krishna to Lord Brahma. When Lord Brahma meditates, he's in darkness at the very beginning of the universe. There's nothing there. So he meditates on the word, he hears the word tapa and austerity. And finally, Krishna reveals himself to him and he speaks four verses to Lord Brahma. So these four verses, which I guess are 33, 34, 35, 36, chapter 9 of the second canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, are called the Chaturshlokas because these were the four original Bhagavatam verses. Now, of course, Vyasadeva expanded, you know, into 18,000 verses or whatever of the Srimad Bhagavatam, but these are the four original verses that Krishna spoke. So this is the absolute authority of the Srimad Bhagavatam by the Supreme Lord himself. So let's read this once more. And I always remember Madan Mahan and I remember very clearly that when we were in the Miami Temple back about 73, 74, wherever it was, that our temple president, Abhi Rama Prabhu, he made us all learn and memorize these four verses. And at the time I thought, you know, but now I'm actually very happy they did, because these are so important, and I can still almost remember them after so many years. So the verse again, aham eva sameva gre nanyadyat sarasad param paschadaham yat etachcha yo visheshti sosyaham. Ah, it is I, the personality of Godhead, who was existing before the creation, when there was nothing but myself, nor was there the material nature, this cause of creation. That which you see now is also I, the personality of Godhead, and after annihilation, what remains will also be I, the personality of Godhead. So we have this confirmation of the not only the eternal existence of Krishna, but he is actually the source of everything, he's behind everything, he is existing before and after. Oh, I just remembered that. Sukha, do you remember? Were you there when we had to memorize these verses? Maybe we did a little before you came. Maybe, but so you know, well, we all remembered it. We spent days and days on these in Bhagavatam class. So, yeah, I think, anyway, very, very important verse, and explains very nice how nothing is separate from or independent of Krishna. Now, it's also described here that Krishna provides the necessities for all living entities. He doesn't just inject the jiva souls into this material energy, create everything, and just leave them, you know, to kind of flounder here helplessly in the material world. Describe that, and of course we know, dependent upon one's desires, Krishna rewards accordingly. You know, according to one's particular nature and his desires in the material world, Krishna fulfills those desires. So it's described here for the karmis, or the fruitive workers, he gives the intelligence, the senses, and the material ingredients for their work. And for the jnanis, he provides the intelligence by which they can meditate, they can understand philosophy to try to attain liberation. And for the bhaktas, he helps us to attain his association in pure devotional service in so many ways. So that is Krishna entering into in this material world and not and be non-separate from, non-separate? Not separated from it. The second point was that Krishna is the cause and the controller of everything. Now, when he enters into this world, he creates all of the material ingredients. He glances at the material world. The jivas are all there. Then it says he also regulates and controls that material nature. And Vishwanath explains the process of how he enters and regulates it, and that is in the form of, take a guess, Paramatma. Anyway, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says it is Paramatma who enters in and regulates everything, keeps everything going with the living entities in this material world. Now, we also have a little discussion about causation here, and it's just a very one line is thrown in here about upadana nimitta causes. So causation, is just, we know that Krishna, of course, is the cause of everything, but here it's broken down a little bit as the ingredient cause and the efficient cause. The ingredient cause means providing the ingredients, providing the raw materials for creation. And efficient cause means it's sort of like the primary pushing. Actually, this word ingredient cause was also used by Aristotle, you know, for those who are following such things. And Aristotle described four types of causes. I can't remember what they were, but one of them was the efficient cause, which he described as the primary source of the change or the event. Like the artisan is the cause, is the efficient cause of the statue or the painting, the father is the efficient cause of the child, etc. So it's used in a very similar way that it's being used here. Because here we're talking about Maya and Jiva being the ingredient and efficient causes, being the upadana and nimitta causes. So the jiva is that efficient cause. Things go into action. Things happen because of the nature and the motivation of the jiva. And of course, the ingredients are there in terms of material nature. Vishwanath explains this a little bit more in the purport to this verse. He says, next, Shukadev speaks of the Lord's being the cause of all causes and the controller of everything in the universe composed of Maya and Jiva. Because they are his energies, And because his energies are not different from their source, the Shaktiman, he is also the unmanifested nature, Maya, and the Jiva. This establishes the Supreme Lord is the ingredient cause of creation, Upadana Karanam, and the efficient cause, Nimitta Karanam, and also the Supreme Controller. So in other words, Maya and Jiva do not act independently. So while they act as the ingredient and the efficient causes, in one sense, behind them, of course, is Krishna, and Krishna is the ultimate cause of everything. So this is confirmed in a verse in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila 6.16. Upane Purusha Vishvara Nimitta Karana Advaita Rupam Upadana Hananarayana. Lord Vishnu himself is the efficient, nimitta cause of the material world, and Narayan in the form of Sri Advaita is the material cause, Upadana. Of course, Advaita being Mahavishnu, the source of all the material elements. So again, all causation is ultimately resting on Krishna. Now, sometimes these terms are used in different ways. Prabhupada also sometimes talked about the remote cause and immediate cause is another way to look at this. But ultimately, we know that Krishna is Sarva Karana Karanam, the cause of all causes. Now, this is explained by Srila Prabhupada in a purport, Bhagavatam 4.31.17. He says, Krishna is the remote cause, and material nature is the immediate cause of the cosmic manifestation. Material nature is the immediate cause of the cosmic manifestation, but the original cause is Narayan, Krishna. Sometimes people think that the cause of an earthen pot is the earth. We see on a potter's wheel a sufficient amount of earth to produce many pots, and although unintelligent men will say the earth on the wheel is the cause of the pot, those who are actually advanced will find the original cause is the potter, who supplies the earth and moves the wheel. Material nature may be a helping factor in the creation of this cosmic manifestation, but it is not the ultimate cause. So then another point, which is actually in the last part of this verse, is that the jiva can transcend material nature by surrender to Krishna. Now, if we go back to verse 49, we see that thus I have replied to the question you ask me, O King, how the mind can have access to the absolute truth, which is indescribable by material worlds and devoid of material qualities. What's the simple answer to that question? How can the mind understand that which is beyond the mind? He can't materially, but by the mercy of the Lord. That's it. In fact, it's not in here, but in Vishwanath's purport, text 49, very short, he says, the mind can perceive God by the power of devotion, bhakti, arising from the mercy of the Supreme Lord. I thought that was just a wonderful, simple, clear answer. You know, how do we understand all of this, which is totally beyond us? We have material mind, material senses, intelligence. We can perceive God by the power of devotion arising from the mercy of the Supreme Lord. So it's by Krishna's mercy that he spiritualizes the mind and intelligence and enables us by his mercy to be able to understand him and also understand everything else about this material creation involved material and spiritual energies. In the particular verse we're reading now, it said, by surrendering to him, one can escape the embrace of illusion just as a dreaming person forgets his own body. So there's some discussion about that, because the question is, how that's actually been asked and discussed in this purport, is how does one remain active in the body after liberation? If one is fully understanding his position as the spirit soul, that he is not this body, is not this mind, how does he continue to act in this material world? Now, Prabhupada talked about this in the Krishna book in chapter 87, in his writing about this. At the very end of the chapter, Prabhupada said, how the living entity becomes liberated from the modes of material nature after surrendering unto the Supreme Personality of Godhead is illustrated by the example of a sleeping man within a room. When a man is sleeping, everyone sees that he is present within the room. But actually, the man himself is not within that body. For while sleeping, a man forgets his bodily existence, although others may see that his body is present. Similarly, a liberated person engaged in devotional service to the Lord may be seen by others to be engaged in the household duties of the material world, but since his consciousness is fixed in Krishna, he does not live within this world. His engagements are different, exactly as a sleeping man's engagements are different from his bodily engagements. So, at that very exalted state, when one is a pure devotee of the Lord, totally free from the modes of material nature, totally free from all the influences of Maya, then one will be within this world, act within this world, but one's consciousness is with Krishna. One's consciousness is completely spiritual. An example is given that a man may be sleeping, but his consciousness is far away in another world. So this is the example and the idea that's given of the sleeping person in the dreamlike state. Of course, the dreamlike state is actually, for the liberated person, the dreamlike state is actually the reality. You know, so we could say that in one sense, it's the material world is the dream, and the reality is one's spiritual consciousness. Then it's discussed that Krishna may pay special favor for devotees without regulated practice. It says generally one needs to perform many years or lifetimes of devotional practice to be able to attain the mercy of the Lord and to attain the lotus feet of Krishna. But then there are many examples given of those who became liberated without spiritual practice. And there's some quotes by Bhishma Dev, and he describes those who saw Krishna on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He said everybody in the battlefield of Kurukshetra became liberated. The ones that Krishna killed, but also just everyone who saw Krishna became liberated. And then there's an example of demons killed by Krishna who also became liberated. So any contact with Krishna will give this liberation. And for one who is a devotee, not a demon, it'll also bestow pure devotional service within the heart. So, in the purport, it says, knowing this, we should put aside all fear and doubt and give ourselves fully to the process of devotional service. So either we work hard and we qualify for devotional service, or we simply get the mercy of the Lord and the Guru, spiritual master, and devotional service is granted to us. Wanted to read another purport of Srila Prabhupada's. This is from Majjhalita 22.100. He says, situated in everyone's heart, Krishna deals differently according to the living entity's position. The living entity's position is to be under the protection of the illusory energy or under Krishna's personal protection. When a living entity is fully surrendered, he is under the direct protection of Krishna, and Krishna gives him all intelligence by which he can advance in spiritual realization. So, and it's saying here that one should put aside all fear and doubt and take the process of devotional service. And so this is what the devotee feels. The devotee feels under the personal protection of Krishna. Like this is one of the six symptoms of surrender, right? One feels directly protected by Krishna. One is always feeling that Krishna is guiding him, Krishna is protecting him, Krishna is giving him everything that is needed in his devotional life. And Krishna also gives the intelligence to advance in spiritual realization. So sometimes, even if we feel like we're a little overwhelmed by such things as the prayers by the personified Vedas and so much difficult philosophy, not to fear, not to worry. Krishna will give us the intelligence, and he will help us to advance, giving us what we need. And what I find that is, whatever we are ready for, according to our level of advancement, Krishna gives us that intelligence. Krishna gives us what we need in our spiritual life. So maybe all we need to know is that Krishna is God, or you know, we're not this body. Then later maybe we can understand more of these very more intricate prayers and philosophical understandings. But it really is not so important. That's really more according to one's nature. Some people have very intellectual natures, and they need to hear this type of philosophy. Their minds need to be convinced, and they just find it interesting, just their nature. They're philosophically inquisitive. Others are not so much, you know, but they may take equal pleasure in whatever it might be, simple service to Krishna or serving the deity or sweeping the floor or going out and preaching. Whatever that might be, it's equally valuable in devotional service, and one simply needs to feel
That sense that being connected with Krishna and protected by Krishna in all circumstances. Okay. I'll stop at this point if there's any discussion. Janmashtami.
This last point that you made, really, really good class for thinking. This last point about that Krishna reciprocates according to our level of evolution, and that sometimes I get a little confused because Rupa Goswami and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu makes a strong point that our qualification for advancing is based upon our faith and a knowledge of Shastra. And according to how much knowledge and how much faith we have, then that facilitates us developing love and an attachment for Krishna. But on the other hand, there are examples, like in this purport, of personalities that didn't go that route, but then achieved a very high status. And so there's a little bit of a, kind of inherent, I don't know if we'd say contradiction, but at least different understanding, different angles on the same point. If you have any thoughts.
I think it's a reciprocal relationship between bhakti and knowledge. We know that ultimately, according to our scriptures, that knowledge and jnana vairagya are concomitant byproducts of bhakti. In other words, knowledge and realization comes about through the process of bhakti. Not that one through knowledge can necessarily attain bhakti. However, it's also described that they are important ingredients. And certainly one can increase one's devotion by more thoroughly understanding the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If I understand Krishna, I understand his energies, I understand his greatness, then that will lead to my surrender. So I think it works reciprocally, both together.
Put on his books, translating them and encouraging his disciples to regularly read them.
Oh, absolutely, especially because we had practically no knowledge whatsoever of spiritual life.
I think devotees, when they go through, they go deep in studying, it's amazing how they feel facilitated for their advancement.
Yeah, I thought there was something. When one gives up ignorance with any false indication. Yeah, in fact, in many of these verses, even though we've been reading recently, purports have described that one gives up one's ignorance when one understands spiritual life, when one understands his purpose, understands that he's not the body, then one surrenders to Krishna. So, yeah, absolutely, it's important. If we're totally ignorant, then our faith can be very weak. In fact, in the different stages of devotional service, or even when we talk about, Kanishtha, Madhyama, Uttama, some of the definition is that the Madhyamadhikari may not be expert, in Shastra, but he has firm faith, where the Uttamadhikari is bold, expert knowledge. And let's go to Divyanga, is eagerly wanting to say something.
Not to simplify it so much, but I was just listening last night in Prabhupada lecture, and he said, now we have 24 books, and if you're philosophically inclined, you can study these books and learn the conclusion. Or take the simple method and simply chant Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, and you'll realize the whole thing. So that's what Prabhupada said. But another thing about the Madhyam and Kanishtha, and I was just reading last night in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and they were talking about Kanishtha Adhikaris. Prabhupada said that he was talking about two devotees, and they were Kanishtha Adhikaris, but then he said that they're pure devotees of Lord Chaitanya. So if we participate in devotional service, however the spiritual master instructs us, that's how we get to Krishna. And he said, read my books, please. But he just said that if you just chant Hare Krishna, you will realize the entire thing.
One thing that's interesting about that is not only do reading the books helps us spiritual knowledge to understand the conclusions, scriptures, but also it's following the orders of the spiritual master. So in one sense, the most potent thing about reading Prabhupada's books is because it's his instruction, and we gain advancement simply by doing that. Prabhu.
I was just thinking a famous verse to one who has implicit faith in the spiritual master in the Vedas, all the purports are automatically revealed.
Yeah.
So that kind of explains a lot also. That, you know, that mercy, that knowledge, everything can come for someone who, you know, there's a story of the devotee who can't read, right? But he's got the book upside down and he's crying. And why are you crying? Well, because I'm just so amazed that what Krishna would be, Arjuna's tear drivers. But you said, I was so pleased with that. So thank you that you study, but also some people are so severe that they get the mercy automatically.
Well, I think as so many examples, and we can see that's a wonderful one in the verses you quoted. And, I mean, bhakti is a process, and bhakti is what ultimately is going to give us realization, which is going to bring us to Krishna. I was thinking, though, just occurred to me, I haven't formulated this very well, just kind of popped in my mind, that one thing is, so as we're advancing through whatever ways it might be, through our own internal devotion, chanting Hare Krishna, and we get realization, in one sense, how do we formulate those realizations? How do we formulate or understand or make sense and put structure to understanding Krishna? And that's through the philosophy, right? In other words, our background and our philosophical understanding gives us a way of bringing those things together. Otherwise, you'd have kind of this big, wow, I really love God or something, you know what I mean? Which is great, you know, but in other words, without really understanding how it all works together. Another thing I was just thinking about is, who is Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami and Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur, for that matter? Well, we know that Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, who were the greatest philosophers in Vaishnava history, and Jalami Jiva Goswami, are also known as Rupa Manjari, etc., right? And these are Manjari gopis. Now, the Manjari gopis, I don't think, were very interested in philosophy. But yet, somehow, and this is inconceivable to me, they manifest as these personalities who explain the deepest philosophical understandings. So it's all a mystery. But somehow this works together. Somehow our depth of understanding of philosophy and just this other level of pure devotion and just love for Krishna both simultaneously exist. And I think the only way that we're going to understand this is to have it explained by Stiti Di Muni. Okay. I'm sorry. Or ask your question or come in.
We can take that outside. Hey, so this raised a bit of a head banger for me. So are we actually capturing Krishna or the experience by intellectually analyzing the philosophy, or it's probably both, or who knows what, but or is it that we are engaging the intelligence in bhakti and the siddhanta and activities connected to Krishna, and then that purifies the heart, which then connects us to Krishna?
I think the latter. That's a great point. That's, in other words, we want to engage the body, the mind, the intelligence, everything. And the way we gain the intelligence is by studying the philosophy, studying Krishna's words. So that's engaging the intelligence in Krishna's service and developing our bhakti. That's a very good point. See, I knew you'd have the answer. Okay, probably one more Prangavinda, bro.
I was thinking in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adilila, chapter 4, explained that Jnana Sambhita Sar. The Satchit Ananda, the Chit potency, it manifests here for us as a knowledge, Sambandha Gyan, relationship with the Lord.
Mm-hmm.
But ultimately, that same potency manifests in the relationship and feeling is not anymore, but it, how do I word it? It is the same thing transformed into relationship and feelings, which manifest here for us as a knowledge, and accommodating our progress with a concise, discriminating power and
That's a great point. So that idea of sambandha, which is means connection, more or less?
Yes.
So we're connecting. When we think of it as knowing the philosophy, right? That's what we think of sambandha. The first step is understanding, connecting with Krishna, the philosophy. But then that's transformed connection, actual connection with our spiritual relationship with Krishna. Right?
Yeah, and feelings comes.
And
it's
the
same
feeling
thing Prabhupada says. The same potency transforms.
Ah.
The knowledge potency transforms into feeling and relationship.
Okay.
So I was thinking like in reply to Bhagavan Das' question that he asked Prabhupada that in the temple everybody is chanting. Is the result of all the devotees chanting will be same or how does it produce? And then I'm paraphrasing what Prabhupada, what I understood from the answer Prabhupada says. It's in the Vedavyas that when someone chants, his chanting is connecting to absolute. Through the Guru Parampara, disciplic succession. And proportion to his conscious acceptance, realization and faith will produce the result. So each individual, it is the chanting, same chanting, but in each individual will have a different result according to difference, realization, faith and proper conscious acceptance, the word Prabhupada uses.
Thank you. Real quickly, you get the last word, Vedanta.
A couple different comments. One is sometimes we call it Sadhana City or Kripa City. So that for the one part, that's how we're used to hearing that. And then Prabhupada would use the word honorary degree. But don't sit at home, wait for the honorary degree.
Right.
So he says that it can happen, but most people go to school to sadhana. And the point on sambandha, there's a deity for sambandha.
Who's Madan Mohan?
And he's often referred to as Cupid. So when you're talking about feelings and being charmed, so the sambandha gyan is actually you get charmed by Krishna. That's and then Kandarpa Koti, he's got unique loveliness that's charming. So. That because in that verse of Dosa Sangha says the taste leads one.
Very nice, thank you. This I'll make the final point here. In other words, when we're talking about knowledge and using intelligence, we're not talking about just some dry philosophical speculative process. We're talking about learning, understanding about Krishna, right? And developing our connection, developing our relationship with Krishna. That's all part of the use of intelligence and knowledge. Okay, all glories to Shri Prabhupada, thank you.